things to do. So let's start here with me and you. Gonna take a little time. Let's see what we can find. Oh, come on, walk with me, talk with me, tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
And welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and we come your way every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific time, and we encourage you to join us. We encourage you to go to the website, richarddugan.com, where you can listen live. There's the link there, and you'll also see, for the first time, my image, which I struggled with for a long time to put up there, but finally did it, and now you'll be able to listen live as well as listen to the archives at richarddugan.com and the radio show's page. Today we are going to talk with a very special guest who I've had the pleasure of getting to know over the last 2 or 3 years, it seems like, Reverend Karen Weingard, who has had her own radio program on, I would assume, on numerous occasions. You're now living in New York City. What a place to live for someone who is working towards or who is living a very high spiritual, metaphysical life with a message of the same. It almost seems contradictory to some folks. It's like, shouldn't you be living out in nature somewhere? And welcome to the program.
Thanks, Richard. Great to be here. No, that's just the point. You know, if you can be a minister in Santa Barbara, that's really wonderful, but mm-hmm. it's probably no stretch. Okay. But if you become a minister and you can stay it and keep the consciousness in the heart of Manhattan, in the heart of New York, then you're really doing ministry. So for me, my ministry is everyone, all of life. I do ministry on the bus. I do ministry with cab drivers. I do ministry walking down the street. And it's such a place of survival and intimacy. It's kind of New York is a really surprise for people. Mm-hmm. They think it's cold and angry and hostile, and mm-hmm. it is not. It really is much more intimate than even Santa Barbara.
Yeah. Well, I have to. I will share with you that my one and only trip to New York was around Earth Day 1993. Mm-hmm. And my first wife and I were walking with my best friend. I think it was we were walking into Central Park. We're just taking a walk, just enjoying the day. And all of a sudden we see what turned out to be, as we found out later, 1.5 million people heading in our direction. And you know that fountain that they show in the one television show, The Odd Couple?
Yes.
Well, that's where we were. And we looked every which way we could to find a way out of the park as quickly as possible because, again, we did not know what was going on. And obviously it was Earth Day celebration. But I was also there at 5 o'clock on a Friday, which, and if anybody knows, everybody's getting out of work, heading for
right.
getting something to drink, to relax, to unwind. It's the weekend and so on and so forth. And I had two observations at the same time. One was, wow, what incredible energy, the kinetic energy that's just everywhere, right, with all of these people moving around. Yes. But I also observed, and you've lived there, you're living there, I observed that it seemed like they were all sort of oblivious of one another. Now, that was my observation back then. When the place is at 5 o'clock in the afternoon on a Monday or a Friday, are people really all that oblivious there in New York?
You know, that's what they say. I don't believe it's true. I think it's a very new New York. I think it's a very safe New York. It's a clean New York, mm-hmm. which people say, oh, no, that's the truth. And here I'll tell you a story. I ride the bus a lot. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons I went to New York was because I wanted to be part of the world. So I wanted to be rubbing up against people of all religions, all races, all cultures, all languages, and love that. I really feel like I'm part of the world. Mm-hmm. So I get on the bus, and, you know, those of you who don't know what I look like, sort of like, I don't know how you would explain me, but
the woman is not much more than 5 feet tall and looks like a fairy with glitter and these wonderful little sparkly danglies hanging from your hair.
Right, that's me. And so I get on the bus, and inevitably somebody will say to me, whoa, where are you going? You're going to a party? And I say what I always say, no, I am the party. And so that opens up this sort of conversation about what's this about and where are you going? And because I am a believer in love and and consciousness and, for me, God, mm-hmm. I start that conversation and I'm on the bus and I start a conversation with two people. And now I know more and more joining this conversation about love and relationships and how you move through a city like this and finally get to my stop. We're traveling somewhere down one of those large roads. And I finally get to my stop after this long conversation, and I got up and I turned around. It was at Easter, and I turned around to everybody and I said, well, happy Easter to everybody. And for those of you who are celebrating Passover, a very happy Passover. And I start down the stairs and the entire busload stood up and gave me a standing ovation.
Not too many people have the courage to do that because they're afraid of what might happen.
Yeah, no, I have no – you know what? How you greet something is mm-hmm. how you receive it. So yeah. If you go – anywhere in New York, angry and afraid, mm-hmm. you're going to greet that and you're going to meet that.
I want to find out more about your ministry and what it is that you share with people, how you began down this path, and we'll do that as we come back.
Sure.
This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices. Stay with us. I'm Richard Dugan. You can listen to us live at richarddugan.com, and we'll be right back. This is Tell Me Your Story. I'm your host, Richard Dugan. My guest is Reverend Karen Weingard, in from New York City, but she's also spent some time and visits on a regular basis here in Santa Barbara and all parts in between, I'm sure, because you're literally coast to coast. I want to find out a little bit about you and how you began this ministry that you're on. Did you grow up in a religious family? What kind of influences were there? Tell us a little bit about your background there.
You know, I usually tell people you're not your story, but I'll tell you my story. So, I was born in New York and lived in California most of my life and had polio when I was 3 months old. Mm. Didn't walk until I was 13 years old without braces or crutches or a wheelchair or whatever. And so I was told, my folks were told, don't even stand this kid up. She'll never walk. She won't even weight bear. My parents didn't listen. And really, they were believers in God, not in religion, but in faith. They had tremendous faith. And so we went to Roosevelt's Rehabilitation Clinic in Warm Springs, Georgia, three times a week on a DC-3 for many years. And then we moved to California. And my whole life is about faith. My whole life, because I was an observer for all of those first 13 years of my life, it gave me an opportunity. I thought I was specially chosen to at least develop levels of compassion other people don't have. And, you know, kids are cruel, so they call you names, and they don't mean it, but that's what they do. And so it really gave me some insight into behavior and into not being angry and not being resentful. And so that was really the beginning of my ministry is my life. And I think that that's the best kind of ministry because I'm not grabbing at something that I don't know. I'm grabbing from my own life experience and what I know to be true, is that never believe what doctors say, bless your heart, doctors, because there is really no diagnosis in God. You just experience something like that, Richard. So, you know, I'm talking to the choir here. Mm-hmm. You just move forward and know the truth that you can be healed. You can be – now. Do I walk perfectly? No, but who cares? You know,
walking.
Yeah, I'm walking. The feet are moving. One foot is moving after the other. And so really that was the beginning of my desire to be there to support people in their faith, not in a religious sense at all, but in a spiritual sense, in a metaphysical sense. Mm-hmm. Where we all come together is a place of love in the heart. And that's really what I am about. That's what I stand for is, can I love you? You know, I don't want to give you love. I want to be love. I want to be the essence of love because that energy is contagious. So if that's who I am and that's who I am in the world, then I'm going to reflect that part of you to you. Mm-hmm. You'll see that in me. Thinking it's me is nothing to do with me. It really is that part of you that's connected to it.
Now, we are all facing the I'll call it the collective challenges.
Yes.
That others are facing as well. And I call them challenges, and I'm not going to go through the list and litany of what they are, because we all know that we're all being challenged on a regular basis.
Right.
And you can put any kind of name you want on it. How do you address people who might come to you and say, you have no idea what I am going through? And maybe you've never actually been through it, but you still find a way to share with them.
I do believe that compassion is a universal quality of life. And I think that's the place that I meet people, is a level of, I may not have ever had the same experiences that you have, but I have had experiences of pain or sadness or loss or struggle. And so that's the way I can relate to you, but I never want to take your experience away from you. That's your experience. I want to honor it. And how do I honor it, and how do we speak about it in a way that we can enlarge it so that you're not caught in it,
mm-hmm.
so that you don't become defined by it? It's like a person who is growing through the experience of cancer or moving through the experience of cancer. They're not their cancer. They're moving through an experience, and that's so I greet them on that level, you know. I don't ever expect to have the same – I don't think we can have the same experience as anybody about anything.
No.
Can you? Do you?
Because the background that has brought us to the place where it appears we're having the same experience, the reality is we're not. Because of our past, we're viewing it, we're filtering it differently than the other person.
It's all perspective.
Yeah.
It's – we don't even see reality. We only see our perception of reality.
I think it's that analogy of 10 people seeing an accident.
Right.
You're going to get 10 different views.
Absolutely.
Part of the program is to get people to move around on what we like to call the euphemistic circle.
Yes.
Move different points along the way so that – well, let's take a look at Karen's perspective of whatever it is that we're talking about.
Right.
All right. And now Greg Braden and Barbara Marks Hubbard and all of the other folks that we've had on the program, and those that we have not had on yet that we will, we put their perspective into the mix and say, oh, my gosh, gee, they do see it a little bit like me. Not exactly the same, but a little bit. And gee, I never thought of it that way, especially when it comes to relating to one another. In our high-tech world, and in New York, it's got to be extremely prevalent and obvious. What's your observation of our ability to communicate with one another face-to-face when we have all of these other technological gizmos to sort of kind of communicate?
Yeah, it's a high-tech, low-touch society.
Mm-hmm.
And really, we have downloaded so much information, and we're always attached to something sticking in our ear, listening to something, that it is distancing. For me, I'm all about intimacy. So what I strike up conversations with everyone, and what I say to people is, your family now are the people that are in your sphere. The person who is at the cleaners, the person who is at the bank, the person who's packing groceries for you, that's your family. Are you going to speak to them? Are you going to stop for a moment and look them in the eyes and say, hi, how are you?
Mm-hmm.
Because I know I get a history lesson every time I get into a cab, because these guys are from countries I never even heard of. I didn't even know where they are. But I'm interested in who they are and what they can share. And isn't that why we're in this life anyway?
It's a matter of saying that and I remember reading this in James Redfield's book, Celestine Prophecy, that each of us has a message for the other.
Right.
And my analogy was that what we're doing, whether it's using the high tech, you know, as far as the low touch, we are using a Star Trek metaphor, putting up our shields. Now, if you know anything about Star Trek and that concept, nothing gets in or out.
Right.
But we put the shields up anyway, and now I'm not going to get that message from you, and you're not going to get that message from me. So I'm depriving you of my message, but I'm depriving me of yours.
Absolutely. I think that's inauthentic. I think we've had so much come at us in the last 3 years, I believe, with the economy and everything else, the insurance industries and everything, that I think it really is a time for us to be honest, to stop the facades and to stop the walls that keep us separate. And we can't lie anymore. The jig is up, you know?
Yeah.
The jig is up. And what that's about is I need to be real. I need to be authentic. I need to be honest. I need to show up as who I am. I need to not be afraid to be wrong, not be afraid to make what would be called a mistake.
Yeah.
It's real.
Yeah.
It's real.
I find that interesting, that example, because so far, I've only seen one or two examples of individuals who have made, quote unquote, a mistake, and then have turned right around and said, I made a mistake.
Right.
One of them was this, and I thought this was the most incredible experience. I'm sure this gentleman thought so after the fact. It was an umpire at a Major League Baseball game, and he made a call that took a perfect game away from a pitcher.
I remember that game.
The pitcher didn't react in any way, shape, or form. I'm sure he was upset. He's, oh, man, I missed it by that much kind of thing. But after the fact, the umpire said in tears, I screwed up. I made a mistake. And guess what? Other than right now, because it's a wonderful example of acknowledging, hey, I stepped across a line. That's the only reason we're talking about it. Whereas politicians in particular, because they're the seem to be the greatest example, they make a mistake. I did not do that that you're accusing me of. And they'll say it over and over and over again until they believe it. And then until they're shown to have lied. Well, I guess I did. And if you just say it up front, it's over. It's over.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Richard. And, you know, my feeling is that nothing happens out there. Mm-hmm. So when we see politicians do whatever they're doing, that's just a reflection of what we do. It's like the oil spill.
Yeah.
The oil spill was out there, but for me,
it's
about how, it's a metaphor. How have you polluted your own consciousness?
Mm.
How have you allowed your own thoughts and unhappy thoughts and resentment and judgments, how have you allowed that to pollute the environment that you are in? Because that's what that is about. The miners, bless their heart, the miners are, you know, stuck. They're boxed in. They're stuck. Where are we stuck?
Yeah.
Can we use what's going on there to teach us about what's going on in my own consciousness?
Mm-hmm.
And isn't it about, you know, you're not honest, then what you're doing is creating a betrayal and a lack of trust.
Yeah. Now, those who are listening right now are going to probably wonder what we're talking about, only because by the time this program airs in December, they're going, what miners? Well, guess what? The miners may still be there, according to what we've heard. They could be there for three or four months. And if I'm not mistaken, there was actually discussion about withholding from them that information.
Yes, they're not telling them because they're afraid that they will kill their spirit.
Yeah.
And, you know, put yourself in that position. God knows. Bless their heart. But can you imagine locked down in that place, that small, those small quarters with barely anything to eat, even though they're giving him glucose and all, saying, you know, well, it's going to be three more months, guys, before we, you know, able to get you out. I think that they will go crazy.
Yeah. And I mean, of course, not knowing what the conditions are down there, other than they're, at least these gentlemen are alive, if there's even a way for them to start working towards the surface. I don't know that that would even be worth their time. But
I don't know. But I think that it's important for us to have compassion about that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you're right. There are times, though, when brutal honesty is not the best thing that's called for. There are people who have life-threatening illness that are better off really not knowing for them.
Yeah. Now, that's one of the things that I find interesting as well. As we have talked on many occasions on this program about transitioning, which I prefer to use rather than the other words because they're so negatively charged.
I agree.
And I remember it was described as basically you're taking off a big overcoat. That's that's like that's going to be the physical experience as you're dropping an overcoat. And I use the analogy, too. How many cars have you had in your lifetime? You know, two, three, four? And you're going from point A to point B in that car. Well, what's the difference between that and you're changing vehicles from one body to another, whether it's reincarnation or whether it's some other form of body that our essence will reside in, or maybe there will be none. We just don't know for sure.
Well, I think that's to know that you're going to transition, and we all are, needs to what that needs to do in terms of my life is to make this moment very precious, and it is.
Yeah.
This is all I have. Our time together, this is it right now. We may have another time, but it'll never be just like this time. And that's where I think understanding death and dying, conscious living, conscious dying, is all about that.
I used to sit and in church in particular, and I would blink, and my mind was going to the concept that God, as I was taught, was omnipotent, omnipresent, and so forth. And so I'm thinking, and he knows all. Okay. And so I would blink and, oh, he knew I was going to do that. And so every move that I made, and I was like 8 or 9 years old, and every move that I made, oh, he knew I was going to do that. And he knew I was going to do, and he knew I was going to think that. And so, and I almost drove myself crazy. And so those are the concepts that we are taught as we are growing up. And so we are as adults, you and I, we're in a different space than we were as children in some instances. We have worked beyond some of those teachings that were given to us. They didn't work for us. They don't serve us anymore.
Right.
Is there...
First of all, God is a black woman. No, I'm kidding.
Hey, you know? Who am I to argue?
But my concept of God, that consciousness, is God isn't out there.
Mm-hmm.
God is everywhere present,
right,
and within us, so that when we access that and we connect with that energy, all that God is, you are, Richard.
Mm-hmm.
All that God is, I am.
But as we change our perspectives, as
yeah.
we grow through life, if there are people who are holding on, you know, with tooth and nail to those beliefs because it's all they have.
Mm-hmm.
It's not even a question of is it or isn't it serving me? I'm just not happy. Your advice or suggestion to someone who is wanting to shift into the happy mode, you know, not euphoric in that context, but to where the Constitution says that we have the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Right.
But they're not even pursuing it because they're so weighed down by the teachings that they were given.
I think there's really a movement away from religion, more so into a more spiritual approach,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of the approach where we are really all connected to one another, and we all really do want a world that works for everyone. But I think what happens is that we have to go deep in ourselves, and if we have – here's what I say to people. If you're going to make your transition with any secrets, any resentments, or any unfinished business, you're going to be an unhappy person.
Mm-hmm.
And can we let go? The past is over, people.
Yeah.
Those stories are over. What he did to you is over. And the only way to let go of it truly, one of the ways, is to be in forgiveness. Forgiveness
yeah.
of the past, gratitude for every experience you've had. Really, that's deep. And an appreciation for where you are in the moment. So I would say gratitude is the key. Being grateful for your life is what opens the door to life beginning to feel better and look better. It's an energy.
Mm-hmm.
It's quantum. This is a quantum universe. You know?
And then, of course, I kind of joke on the program about how that particular word quantum is used so much these days.
Yeah.
I thought physics was enough, and now there's quantum physics.
No,
and I'm going, okay, so what are they going to call the next one?
Right.
I kind of joke about how man is seems to be so arrogant that just for the sake of argument, there are a billion laws of the universe. Man gets 10
right.
of them and thinks, Eureka, we have found it.
You know, one of the things I spoke last night at Sacred Space, the Sacred Space in Summerlin.
Beautiful place.
Oh, my God. If you have not been there, please, people, go. It is just, you're transported. You don't really think you're even, not even in California, let alone Santa Barbara or Summerlin. And one of the things that I said is, let go of your arrogance and be in a place where you don't know, where you're willing to always be in inquiry. Is that the way I really feel? Is that the way it really is?
Mm-hmm.
Because when we're so sure about our opinions and so set in our ideas, there's no opening for us to learn and to grow. And that can only happen from a spacious environment of, I'm saying these things, but you know what? I don't know if it's absolutely true.
Yeah. I know that in interviewing Greg Braden, we've talked about this in the context of his book, The Healing, The Spontaneous Healing of Belief. And I said, well, that kind of implies that there are some beliefs that we don't need to be healed from. And his response basically was, well, it isn't so much that, is that what he's working towards is that going from believing to knowing.
Mm-hmm.
And that even though the knowing that he's referring to is probably more collective, that we all know that we know that this is true,
right.
Okay? We accept it, and it's no longer a belief. Because and not that we want to argue belief or argue knowing, but you really can't communicate with someone who is so into their beliefs that they don't accept that there are other possibilities.
It closes you off.
And yeah.
I say, what are you carrying in your belief case?
I like that.
You know? And the truth really is our beliefs can get in the way
mm-hmm.
because that's what dogma is. It's a strong belief and
mm-hmm.
unwilling to hear any other point of view.
Yeah.
I want to be in a place where I'm like, I'm living in the mystery.
Mm-hmm.
I'm living in a place of it's wide-eyed. It's childlike wonder. That's what's exciting. What happens to people is they lose that place. And they start to get cynical and negative. And I'm not saying life isn't challenging. It is.
Mm-hmm.
It is. And we have tools within us that we really can use to move through those mindsets.
Yeah. I find myself struggling with others who are negative, who are self-deprecating.
Yeah.
And I remember when I first heard that word, I'm going, do they need a diaper? but the reality is that in one sense, euphemistically, they do.
They do.
But I seem to not necessarily attract them, but I come across them from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going, my gosh, look what you're doing. I mean, look at the incredible things that you're doing in terms of the work that they were accomplishing. My gosh, look at what you're doing. How can you say that about yourself?
Well, where's your focus?
Yeah.
You know, is your focus on what is positive in your life? Are you living in the yes, or are you living in the no?
Yeah.
You know, a lot of that is these parent voices that are in our heads that we carry around and we remember from childhood about you're not this and you're not good enough and you're not this. And all of that is really just a story. Mm. So are you going to buy that story, or are you going to say, wait a minute, is that really true?
Yeah, yeah. I am so fascinated as I observe myself. Mm. The majority of the time, I'm a very optimistic person. I do my utmost not to speak ill of anybody else. To gossip about people. Because I often think, okay, well, you know, I'm saying this about them, and I just wonder what they're saying about me.
Right.
You know, and so I don't want to go there. And yet, there are times when I'm in a room of a few people, and they're talking about this other individual who's not in the room, and it's like you sort of get sucked into that sometimes.
Yeah, getting sucked in is a bad thing.
And I walk away shaking my hands going, oh.
Yeah, get that energy off of me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that, you know, that takes courage. It takes courage to stand for what you believe and not get caught in what you don't.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't, if that's not a value to you, and it really isn't a value to anybody talking about anybody else,
mm-hmm.
then, you know, I have to say, you know, folks, I'm going to have to excuse myself from this conversation because that's not what I do.
Yeah.
I'm not interested in talking about anybody. I don't want to hear the stories.
Yeah.
I'll hold them in prayer. I'll love them up.
Mm-hmm.
Let's change the subject. I'm happy to stay in this conversation. But we're not getting anything out of putting somebody else down, are we really?
No. And I think about that sometimes when I get sucked into those kinds of things. Thinking, okay, well, all right, how can I agree? Other than your example, it's like, okay, when I walk away, it's like, all right, now how do I fix all that? You know, how do I undo all of that stuff that just went on? Because that isn't just nothing. It goes out.
It's the energy. You bet.
Yeah.
You bet. It's toxic.
Yeah.
You know, where I am right now in my life, just in terms of my own teaching, is it's really almost enough about us.
Yeah.
We've been so blessed, self-involved for such a long time.
Yeah.
You know, we're really involved in this is the first time consciousness has ever been conscious of itself in our history. That means that if we're conscious of what our thoughts are, then we can direct our consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
We can choose how we're thinking, where we're putting our consciousness, and therefore affect the evolution of the planet.
Yeah.
Huge. Don't you want to be there instead of talking about how small somebody is?
Exactly. Do you ever find yourself in a situation where a certain thing happens and you stop in your tracks going, oh, I know what I'm supposed to do here? It's like when you hear the messages, whether it's from your mouth, which is normally the case, what we say to others is what we need to hear.
Often.
You ever find yourself in a situation where now you're in that situation, something's happened, and you're now responsible because you heard it or you said it weeks, months, years ago, and now it comes back to your mind, your memory going, but your ego gets in there going, no, but I want to do this. But you can't because there's that other message that says, this is not the way we handle situations like this.
Your ego's a killer.
Yeah. It's
ego,
a killjoy.
Yeah, you're totally right. It means edging God out.
Yeah.
That's what ego stands for,
mm-hmm.
edging God out. And what I mean by that is your spirit will always say, go for it, do it, that's awesome.
Yeah.
And your ego goes, I don't know if you have the time. You know, mm-hmm. it really isn't mm-hmm. going to be a success. Why am I going to waste my time on that? Anytime you hear that little voice that is talking you out of something, that's your ego. And once you start to identify it, you start not to be a part of it.
Mm.
That's limiting. It's your limited mind. It's your limited thinking. Why would you want to limit your thinking or your life?
As we continue here on Tell Me Your Story, talking with Reverend Karen Weingard, I want to ask you a little bit about your observations of the, I'm going to call it the phenomenon, even though we've known about it for 20 or 30 years, this event, as mm-hmm. some people are viewing it, right. of 2012, December 21st. Mm-hmm. But I want to let our listeners know that if you want to hear archives of this program or this program again, go to richarddugan.com. Love to hear from you. Email richard@richarddugan.com. And this is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We come your way every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific time, and again, streaming live on the internet at richarddugan.com. There's a movie that came out last year.
Yes.
November of 2009. I've had a number of people on talking about 2012, including Greg Braden, who mm-hmm. demystifies the whole thing. And I actually went to a website, and I was able to contact the woman who runs the website. I have not had her on yet because her perspective is of a physical destruction.
Right.
And even though, as I stated at the beginning of the program, I like to have everybody's viewpoints, I don't know that I want to go there with her. I'm not sure. Now, I may change my mind down the road. Someone will be saying, well, wait a minute, that's not fair, you know. Well, I've had an atheist on this program.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked. I says, so what's your perspective of spirituality? You know, he says, well, I don't believe in this bearded guy up in the sky, but he does believe in spiritual principles and so on and so forth, which I thought was fascinating.
Yeah.
I says, I need to hear this from an atheist, because all I hear is what an atheist is from, say, the Christians.
Right.
You know, so getting it firsthand.
I always ask them, you know, do you believe in love?
Yeah.
Because I may be calling it God, but it's the energy of love.
And what's fascinating, too, is a lot of these people, not atheists specifically, but a lot of people who are who don't believe in, you know, this, again, the deity, old man with a beard,
right.
but they do believe in spiritual principles. Many of them that I've talked with are scientists, physicists.
Yes. It's,
I mean, they're in the head a lot, and yet, my gosh, you guys are thinking about this, and I'm thinking, wow, they're outside the nine dots of their own philosophy. But getting back to 2012 in terms of your observations of, is it just a transition? Is it going to be a physical disaster? I mean,
well, what do you think we've been living in?
Well, again, that's
let's
perception.
Let's get real. Well, how has your life been in the last year? How has what is happening outside in terms of the economy and all that affected your life? Hasn't it stripped away a lot of the ways in which you've known yourself or the way you've lived or the way you've perceived things? I mean, I think here's what happens with 2012, 2013.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's it. Doom and gloom, that's a scare tactic. I think that that's, unfortunately, I think that religions have kept a lot of people stuck by fear.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe in it. I think what is happening is that we are evolving all the time. We are transitioning to new consciousness all the time. We are shedding the old all the time. We are shifting and changing moment by moment. And we've made this 2012 into some big thing. Like, you know, for what reason?
Yeah.
For what? I mean, it's become a very good thing to sell product.
Well, first of all, my observation is that 2012, December 21st, will be just like Y2K.
Right.
Nothing's going to happen. I was
That's
in a gas
right.
station on December 31st, and of course, working for a news station at that time back in Phoenix, I was monitoring, and of course, they were already getting reports from the transition point, the international dateline, and then in Australia, and so on and so forth. Nothing was happening. And so this woman comes into the gas station all freaked out. I've got to fill out my car before tomorrow because blah, 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 because computers are going to shut down, et cetera, et cetera. And I said, ma'am, you need to calm down. I work for a news station and we've been monitoring and we've been running the broadcast. Nothing's happening.
Right.
Just relax. Nothing. And it's not because we bought the patch software. It's because
yeah.
nothing was going to happen in the first place.
That's right.
Second of all, it happens to be my wedding anniversary, 10 years.
Oh.
And so I thought that was really funny. I didn't even connect it until I was talking with Greg Braden about this. He said, well, see, that's what the Mayans were waiting for, your wedding anniversary, to see what you were
right.
going to do.
So I love him. And absolutely, you know, we can catastrophize everything
oh, yeah.
in our life if we choose to. And why? So that you live in fear?
Yeah.
If you live in fear, you're closing down the channel of your own creativity.
Yeah.
So my feeling is get all of those things out of the way, be open and live your life,
mm-hmm.
you know,
absolutely,
and not allow anything, fear, doubt, worry, concern, limitation, anger, judgment, any of those things to get in the way of who you are really as a creative being, because you want to receive the flow and participate in the flow, and you can't if the scrim across your consciousness is all of those limited beliefs and feelings and fears.
Mm-hmm.
So 2012, bless your heart, I'm going to be out. I'm always creating a party, because I'm all about celebrating your life.
Exactly.
I'm going to celebrate my life.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And by the way, I when you were mentioning about your childhood and growing up with polio, my present wife also had polio as she was growing up. But she's out there. She's walking around. She's doing fine. I don't notice that she has a problem walking. But it was one of those things that afflicted her, obviously, as it afflicted you. And it was just one of those experiences that you went through that gave you what you have today.
Without a doubt. I mean, it truly was a blessing in my life. And I think there is a way to look at what happens in our life as to what is it I'm supposed to learn from this experience. That doesn't mean you're supposed to love it necessarily. There's tough times out there, and people go through tough things, and my heart breaks open for people in struggling. And so I'm not minimizing that at all, but I am saying that usually, not while you're in the experience, but when you have some distance on the other end of the experience, can you understand what the blessings were about that experience you were in?
Let's talk a little bit about the attitude of lack. When we start going through events such as we are in this country and around the world globally, from an economic standpoint, people start to hold on. They start to contract. They start to hoard, if you will, whether it's money or possessions or food or whatever. And my feeling is that there always has been, is, and always will be more than enough for everyone.
I completely agree with you. I think this is an abundant universe. Look at it, the leaves on the trees or the grains of sand. It is absolutely an abundant universe. Our problem is distribution.
Mm-hmm.
We have enough of everything to feed and clothe everyone, but we don't.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's also part of what feeds war, is that I can't trust you because you're hoarding yours. If I'm going to share with you, if I'm going to open up that consciousness and really look at social justice, not having a bunch of lawyers and thinking that's legal justice, but social justice, I'm going to create trust with you because I'm going to share with you. It's not mine.
Mm-hmm.
It's what can I give? How can I share with you? How can I open up what I have? And the hoarding, which I think was your point and a good one, closes down the channel. It tightens it up. That means things can't go through that channel. If I'm stingy, if I'm negative, if I'm fearful, if I'm afraid to give, then I'm not in an attitude of generosity, which is, you can hear it. It's, you can hear feelings like love and forgiveness and kindness and joy. They're openings. You can hear anger and resentment and hostility and greed as closings. You can hear it in the energy when you even say the words.
Mm-hmm.
We want to be in energies that are open and available.
What are your thoughts about, I mean, certainly our consciousness is raising because, as you stated, this is the first time that consciousness is aware of itself and of its growing and its changing.
Mm-hmm.
But where do you see us as a people on the planet in maybe 50 or 100 years? I mean, I've even asked this question because actually the question I've been asking is sort of the proverbial ultimate question, but I'm asking it not of us as individuals, but us
as a
people.
A collective.
What is our purpose? What is it that we're trying to achieve here on this earth that we haven't achieved before? And will it really make any difference, or are we going to just continue to keep repeating and repeating and repeating, wiping out civilization, starting over again, wiping it out, starting over again?
Yeah, I think we are in a dangerous place if we keep going the way we're going.
Yeah.
I do believe in the collective. I do believe that as a people, my desire for all of us, and the reason why I think we're here in the first place, I think we're here to understand what our true nature is. Our true nature is about love and giving and caring and compassion. That is who you are. You may not be acting out on that right now. I'm not speaking about you, Richard, because that is who you are. But I am saying that people may be closed down, but that's who we are. And our experiences in life are really supposed to force that open so that we open to that truth. I'm here to love.
Mm-hmm.
I'm here to give. I'm here to be kind. That's the collective I want to be a part of. That's the energy I want to hold 10 years from now, 20 years from now. I want to be in a world that works for everyone.
Yeah.
And I don't mean that to sound, oh, isn't she sweet? That's so airy-fairy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mean it that way. I mean, that's the truth of who you are. So let's step into that.
I mean, we will, in small instances, we will help people around us. I mean, just case in point, we have a couple that lives up on the hill where we live. And the gentleman, a young guy, he's probably in his late 20s, early 30s, and he's out there doing work and what have you. And they were out there fixing dinner, and he cut his thumb. So they come down to us for medical assistance. I don't know why they think that, other than that my wife is a medicine woman of sorts. And then apparently he got poison oak on his back and his arm. They came down to us for the calamine lotion and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. And we're there to help. But if it gets much larger than that for some folks, I don't have the resources to do that. Do you still, do you believe that it is important, if you're wanting to be there for other people, that you do have to take care of yourself first, or you'll be no good to those other people?
Well, you know, I'm tired of the me generation, so I'm a little askew from that.
Okay.
Yes, I think you have to take care of yourself. But ultimately, I think we need to get over ourselves.
Okay.
And the evolutionary consciousness, or the evolutionary impulse, or the collective evolution that I see is there's a bigger world out there. There's a bigger picture out there. We're part of a bigger collective here.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to give. Here's how I know that that's true of us. 9/11, Katrina, you name it. The tsunamis, anything that has happened pulls people's heart open, and they give and they give and they give. And the crisis is over and they go back into hoarding and being fearful and being negative or whatever. I don't want to have a huge crisis that forces us open.
Yeah, it should be willing.
Yeah.
Should be, this is what I want to do.
Because
not, oh my gosh, this
are.
Is what I have to do because of the disaster.
Right. It's It is who we are. We are love. That is who we are. And anytime I am or you are, any of us are acting out of that place of love, we're not being the truth of who we are.
Yeah. It is a struggle. There's no question about it. And we're going to talk more about that as we continue. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan. Stay right where you are. We will be right back.
But you know, empties out as you go. Walk with me, talk with me.
Tell me your story. New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan. Thank you for joining us on this program. We're fast approaching the end of our broadcast, but Karen Weingard has been our guest talking about a wide variety of subjects, and hopefully they've been helpful to those who are listening. And if you'd like for others to hear what she has to say, you can go to the archives page, which is the radio show's page of richarddugan.com. They can also go to your website.
Yeah, I have a website, which is www.karenweingard.com. Easy enough. And on there are talks and whatever. You know, I'm not one of those people who pushes product. My heart is open. But if you're interested in hearing anything or getting I've written a couple of books, and they're available there.
Yeah.
And so I appreciate it. Thank you.
And if you get one of those books, you'll see just exactly what she looks like, all partied up.
Well, one of the books
ready
is called I Am the Party.
Yeah. I think that's great. I myself love going to places where there are other people, gatherings especially, and just mingling and talking with people and listening to their ideas and what have you, and hopefully sharing a few of my own as well. Gee, there's a surprise if I didn't do that. And that's a lot of fun, to get out and basically mingle with people.
Right.
I've used the analogy that if God wanted us all to live solitary lives, I'm pretty sure there are enough planets in the universe for each one of us to live separately from one another. But the reality, guess what? We're all here on this one. And that doesn't just imply, it speaks very loudly to the fact that it's apparently we're supposed to learn how to coexist together.
I believe we're interdependent. I think that's
You
know, we're not meant to live alone, just be alone, be isolated. It's what creates depression.
Yeah.
And people who are depressed, bless their heart, they isolate themselves, which makes it even worse. So I'm not saying I'm not a big party person. Mm-hmm. My book says I am the party, but I don't go to a lot of big
right.
parties. That's not my deal.
You just take it with you wherever you go.
I am it.
Yeah, that's right.
But I would rather do what we're doing, which mm-hmm. is what makes you so good, Richard, is that you listen, is to sit across from somebody and look them in the eyes and say, hey, we're in this. How do you feel about this? Or how can I share with you? Or what can I learn from you?
Yeah.
Or what do you want to tell me?
Do you remember the story from, I think it was World War II? Where
I wasn't even born yet, Richard.
Neither was I. I'm not, but I'm sure you've heard the story, where you had the American soldiers and or the Allied soldiers and the Germans, and it was Christmas.
Yes.
And for that day, they stopped fighting. They came together to celebrate Christmas.
Right.
And I thought, how wonderful! And then after that, what did they do? Oh, they went back to fighting.
That's right.
What?
That's right. We've done that even since the war.
Yeah.
Where we've had Christmases that were declared that safe day, that prayerful day. Please, if you can do it for one day, what is that about? I don't really believe anybody really wants to be at war.
No.
I think it really comes from fear.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not one of those believers who says it's all fear, it's all love. But I think that when we are fearful, we constrict. And when we constrict, we want to protect. And when we protect, then we want to hold back ourselves and what we have. And that's dangerous.
Yeah.
So do people really want to fight? No.
No, I don't think so.
I don't believe that.
I love one comedian who talks about that and says he's got a solution to war, and that is that anytime there is a conflict that two or more countries want to get involved in, that the soldiers must enter into the conflict naked.
Yeah, I love that.
So it's like, how are you going to do that?
Yeah.
Explain that to me. How are you going to? Because even one gentleman I heard say once, he's been to the Middle East, for example, and he says, you know, I can't tell a Palestinian from a Jew.
You bet.
I don't know who's who, you know, unless I have a program and they're labeled. And that's an amazing thing. I mean, I'm sure that there are distinctions between, say, Japanese and Chinese, you know, as far as physical attributes, but. You know, unless I'm around people like that of the different cultures, I'm not going to know the difference.
Right.
And to me, that's the ultimate freedom, is not knowing the differences. And so, as I've said many times, if there is a difference that makes no difference, there is no difference.
You know, I absolutely think Santa Barbara is what everybody else knows it to be, the paradise, and it's beautiful, and it's clean, and it's safe, and it's all that.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the reasons I left was it was too white. And people laugh at me, and I say, you know, it isn't that there aren't Latino folks here and mm-hmm. black folks here, but you don't socialize. Everybody is kind of separated
yeah.
in their group. What I love about New York is I'm walking with or on the bus with everyone,
yeah.
listening to every language, and it creates such a different awareness. It's no longer about separation. We're all together here.
Yeah.
We're lucky that we can cross town.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
Or make it through the winter.
Yeah.
But we're doing it with humor, and we're connected.
Yeah.
See, here and LA, the places like that, it's isolated, and there's a fear of intimacy because you're in your car, your windows are rolled up, your stereo is on or your music is on, you go into your subterranean parking or you go into your house, you close the door, you turn your computer on. It's like you're not even, you could go without talking to a person all day long.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's horrific.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are no differences. The difference of color, difference of tone, different language. But truly, here's the basis. I love and I want to be loved, and I ask for and want approval and acceptance as you do.
Mm-hmm.
We're all the same that
sure.
way.
Absolutely.
We're all the same.
Before we wrap up our program, again, I want to give out your website, which we will
Thank
be linked
you.
To, and people can get there through right. RichardDugan.com and the link to this radio program. But they can do that through KarenWeingard.com.
Right.
Okay. And you have books and talks and so forth that are available
yeah.
there. You could have been doing a lot of different things, and I save this question for the end for most of my guests. Why this? Why now?
I'm being.
Okay.
It is who I am. Who I am is all about love and caring and compassion. And if I can't bring that into the world, then I'm living a dishonest life. So I'm here authentically not only with you, but here in life, to be the truth of who I am, to stand up for who I am, what I believe. You may not agree with it, and that's okay, but I can't lie. I don't want to be, here's a great phrase, I don't want to be less than all that I am to be loved by you.
I like it. A song coming on. Karen, thank you so much for joining
us. Thank you, Richard. Wonderful to be with you.
I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true, whether it's being the party or going to one. Either way, we encourage you to join us every Saturday at 3 p.m. Pacific time and listening live on the internet at richarddugan.com, as well as listening to our archives. Until next Saturday at this same time, I'm Richard Dugan. Love to all.